Vilima, Coast to Coast, Show 14, October 23rd, 2025. Thou wilt should be the whole of the law. Welcome to Thelema Coast to Coast. My name is John Crow, and I'm the host of this show. Today's show is a lecture by Keith418 about the Goetia. But before starting the lecture, I have a few announcements. First, the new Thelema Coast to Coast website is up and running. It has forums, lots of links to resources, the podcast, pictures of the postcards sent in by listeners, and much, much more. One of the forum posts is tracking all the countries that Thelema Coast to Coast has listeners in. Currently, there are 10 countries listed, but I know there are more of you out there. Please check out the forum and see if your country is included. If not, please post, and I'll get your country added to the list. Also, as a bonus to this podcast, there's an additional 32-minute outtake from Keith418 of Practical Advice and Q&A. This outtake is only available on the Thelema Coast to Coast website. www.thelemacoasttocoast.com. That's thelemacoasttocoast.com. Now, the stickers are in, and they'll be going out to the people who sent postcards, but there's no reason you can't get one. I have plenty, so please send a postcard to the address Thelema Coast to Coast, care of John Crow, P.O. Box 7045, Marietta, Georgia, that's M-A-R-I-E-T-T-A, Georgia, 30065, and that's in the United States. All postcards will be scanned and added to the Thelema Coast to Coast website, where right now we have just under a dozen cards. I want to mention a new sponsor, Grass Games. They can be found at grassgames.com. They're not paying money to be a sponsor, but instead they will be giving a complete set of their games to one lucky listener. This includes their Table Tennis Pro, Solitaire 3D, and their 3D Reversi Deluxe, an Othello-type game. All their games are available for both Mac and Windows. Check out the site www.grassgames.com and download the free 3D Asteroids. The winner will be chosen at the end of November, randomly from all the listeners who have registered on the Thelema Coast to Coast website by the day of the drawing. We appreciate Grass Games' support and listening to Thelema Coast to Coast. Lastly, the next podcast will be an interview with well-known Thelemic author Lon Milo Duquette. After that, I will be having a follow-up discussion with Keith418 about the Goetia. If you have any questions about the Goetia from this podcast and the outtake, please post them to the Thelema Coast to Coast forum, and I will sort them out and ask Keith418 when I interview him. I will also be interviewing Michael Conlin of Red Wheel Wiser. If you have questions for him about the book publishing business, about things regarding to getting your books published, or anything about magical books, the production of magical books, publishing, anything involved in that, please take a few moments and post on the Thelema Coast to Coast web forum. I look forward to everyone's questions and feedback on the website. Now, on to Keith's lecture.
What we're really going to talk about today is the Goetia, a controversial system of invocation. And I'm going to talk about the advantages of using the Goetia as a system and the disadvantages of using the Goetia as a system. And if you are thinking about using the Goetia or considering it as an idea, I'm going to lay out some of my thoughts about my experiences with it, what I think works with it, what I think maybe doesn't work so well with it, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about practical issues and approaches. This is just an introduction. If people are interested, maybe we could do a follow-up. But I thought I would cover the things that I thought were good about it and the things that were maybe not so good about it, to give people a sort of balanced look at it from the start. So I'm going to start with the top 10 advantages to using the Goetia as a system. Number 10, okay, and I'm drawing a 10 with the circle at the bottom of the board. What does that imply? Magical occult audience.
Malkuth!
Right, okay. And there's something very significant about the Goetia and Malkuth, I think, which is that it is the number 10 book on the list that Crowley gives us for the AA on the short list in book 4. Does anyone know what number 1 is? Goetia is number 10. What is number 1?
The equinox.
The equinox, yay. So that would make the equinox in Keter, and it would put the Goetia, Malkuth. That's interesting. The Goetia, we find ourselves down in Malkuth, at least if we go along with that idea. And you know, we're in Malkuth. What do you get in Malkuth? What's Malkuth about? Malkuth is about stuff. And one of the advantages of using the Goetia as a system is it gives you stuff. It's about things and stuff. Who doesn't need more stuff? Well, if you talk to my wife, I don't, because our house is full of my crap. But regardless, I think, you know, we could all use more stuff. And in this sphere, the sky is really the limit, Tower of Pei, Tower of Babel issues notwithstanding. The ancient Hebrew traditions tell us that King Solomon used the demons to build the Temple of Jerusalem. And there's a fantastic pseudographic book called The Testament of Solomon, which is nothing but Solomon directing the demons to build the temple and them trying to get out of work by telling him other things they can do. And so he says, okay, build that wall. The demon's building the wall. He goes, you know, if you burn saffron during an earthquake, I can do, shut up. Go back to work. Write down what he said. The next demon comes by and tells what it can do, and he says, no, grind the stones, shut up, write that down, grind the stones, and the book goes on forever, and I have never seen a fully translated version of this. I'm sure they exist, but most of the translators get so tired of this, it's like, okay, there's another 50 wretched chapters of this demon crap, like, I can't do it, it's too boring, like, just take my word for it. So it's usually cut up that way, but this is really important because I think most magicians, especially in the Thelemic community, really aren't about Malkuth. I mean, one local magus told me, I tell all my students, just ignore Malkuth entirely, don't worry about it, just forget about it. And I think we kind of see the evidence of that in our own community. There are no buildings that we own. There are no beautiful structures that we have that are ours. Our temple equipment, by and large, is probably not what it could be when you look at other religious communities, not every single one. And I think we're kind of struggling against that mentality of ignoring Malkuth or going along with the crap that we have rather than aspiring to fixing our situation up with that. And that is both as a community and also as individuals. People often are not very materialistic. They're, you know, they live in a crappy apartment and drive a crappy car and have a crappy job and don't have any stuff. That's somehow a virtue, and they're great magicians because of that, rather than losers who can't get the stuff that they really need and would make them happier. This is my, you know, contrarian opinion, but I think this is an issue. Now, I'm not advocating materialism, but one of the things about, I sort of am, but what I'm advocating here is that unlike other systems, the Goetia really is decisive about things and stuff in Malkuth. You know, if you ask the demons for something, if it doesn't manifest in Malkuth where you can see it, it hasn't worked. The magic's failed. And I remember doing one goetic operation where I said, okay, this is what I want. I want this thing. And 2 weeks later, I walked back into the room where he'd done the operation, and there was the box with that thing in it right where we had done the operation. And I was struck. I said, man, it worked. There it is. And whether you believe in magic or not, you know, I didn't have the thing when I started doing it, and after I did the thing, I got the thing. So there was the thing. It was right there. You couldn't argue about it. It wasn't, you know, something we could debate. We could argue about how I got it or the tools that I used to get it. but it went from zero to thing really obviously. And I think that's a virtue of the Goetia. You know, you can do goetic magic, and if you get stuff, it's working. If you're getting the stuff you're asking for, then it's working. If you're not getting the stuff that you're asking for, it's not working. And you know that. You're not like, did I really get it? No. So the thing is there or it's not there. It's very cut and dry. And that cut and dry factor is important in magic. It's not unimportant. People want to gloss over it. It's not that important. No, it's important. Okay. I've written about this before, but there's a group called Sokagai International. I just met with one of their representatives miraculously on Friday. Right. Namyoho Renge Kyo. But this is a Nichiren Shoshin Buddhism, and it's extremely materialistic version of Buddhism, where then very magical. I've worked with magicians who were trained in Nichiren Shoshin Buddhism, and they're wonderful to do goetic magic with. They're absolutely the best people because they are totally focused. Nichiren Shoshin Buddhism trains them to be totally focused on their objectives. And basically, in Nichiren Shoshin Buddhism, you chant for the thing you want. You know, say you want a new house. Well, you sit and you look at the first stanza of the Lotus Sutra that the priest has painted for you, that you set up very haphazardly in your little hovel because you don't have a house that you want. And you pray to that thing and you chant over and over again while picturing your desire for your new house. When you get the house, however, which you will, and the people who are into SGI, they're like, I dare you. I double dare you. They're not like, well, you might get it, or you might not, or not getting it isn't really that important, or some people get it, some people don't. No, they're like, you will get it. What you chant for, you will get. I dare you. Go ahead, try it. They're very, very confident, and they just dare you. If you run into people like this, they're just like, I dare you. Go ahead, chant. Go ahead. You'll see. You'll see. They're not embarrassed about it. But if you, when you get your house, not if the great pumpkin comes, but when the great pumpkin comes, when you get your house, you upgrade your little temple in your house for the next thing that you chant for, right? You got your house, now what do you need? A car, right? So then you get the car, you upgrade again. Well, how do you upgrade? You build a better shrine, you get better equipment, and you sell your old crappy equipment to the new guy who just came in to the center, who's just starting out, who lives in a hovel and doesn't have a house yet. And you're constantly working to upgrade your equipment. This doesn't happen a lot in the Thelemic community. Crowley designed beautiful weapons and material for us in Book 4, and people looked at it and said, I cannot afford, you know, this beautiful sword, so I'm not going to do magic. And later on, Crowley saw this was happening, and in Magic Without Tears, he said, you can improvise. Don't think you have to have the ideal magical weapon. Improvise. I improvised a temple when I was on a mountain. I used my lamp. You know, I used my pickaxe for a sword, whatever. You can go read this in Magic Without Tears. And he's saying, go ahead and improvise. Well, we all said, okay, well, we can improvise. And guess what? Now this, you know, plastic thing, that'll be my cup. And, you know, this stick somebody left on the side of the road, that will be my wand. And when we go and we do our magic, we don't upgrade. We keep using the same crap we used when we started with because we're lazy and it doesn't occur to us, upgrade your attack and you will get better results. The Nichiren Shoshin people have that down. They're already trained. They're looking forward to, and they have a kind of deal going on, you know, with the Buddha. Give me the house, you will get a better shrine. Give me the car, you'll get an even better one. Give me Jenny McCarthy, and you will not even believe how gigantic your shrine will get. And if you go and meet some really successful and, you know, Nichiren Shoshin people, they've got sake bottles next to the thing that's as big as, like, they're 6 feet tall. Huge, you know, things of sake that are like, hey, you know, this is, they're going to get their reward. And I think this is important to keep in mind when we look at the Goetia, because we can do the same thing. If the Goetia is working for us, it will help us continue to upgrade our temple. And the demons that you're talking to, this should be one of the things that you should be talking about is, well, I need X, Y, or Z thing. And when you confront the SGI people and how materialistic their Buddhism is, and Buddhism is not usually known for material, like, Monty Hall, come on down, you know, get in your car. That's not really what Buddhism is known for. They say, hey, look, people cannot make spiritual progress if their material needs are not being met. They have to build a platform of having their material craft together before they're ever going to get to these higher states. We are giving them the tools to get to that higher level. What we're trying to get here is that people are moving, you know, up the level so that there is a point, you know, which is driving the construction of all of their work. And I think the occult community, by and large, has missed this. I think that we are sort of stuck where we were in a lot of ways. The idea of constantly trying to improving is seen as too onerous. And I think one of the ways to get good results with the Goetia is to have this kind of program going on, that you're part of a, you're using them as part of a larger project. So, and I'll come back to this later, but if you're talking to the demons and saying, hey, let's, you know, this is what I need, this is what we're building, can you help me, this is what you guys are good at, let's go, then you're putting them to use in a larger kind of project, and that's what I want people to look at should they try to use this system. So, the next level that we're going up to is number 9, which is...
Custodian.
Right. Now, in the AA... What work, what task do people do at the Yezod level? What is their...
Astral
work, mastering the astral plane. And the Goetia is really, really, really good at getting practice in dealing with the astral plane, because that's generally how the demons and monsters and creatures turn up, is they turn up on the astral plane. Whether you're in the AA or not, getting good at astral vision and seeing things on the astral plane usually is something that is considered a worthwhile area to develop in. You can't make a lot of progress in the higher spheres without doing really well with astral vision. You know, if you're a serious magician, if you're really into the occult, that's something you're going to have to learn how to do. And unfortunately, it's not easy for most people. But if you work with the Goetia, you can get good at it. Well, why is that? I did not start out being very good at the astral plane at all. In fact, when I was told that I had to get good at it, I was like, good luck, because I'm not going to be able to do this. I was just like, that, don't think it's, don't have any talent, don't feel good at it, don't feel like it's something I'm going to be able to do. And one of the things I noticed when I started doing yoga, my teacher tried to get me to do dream work to help my astral vision. It didn't work. He tried to have me do visualization exercises to help my astral vision. It didn't work. Every single thing I tried to do, short of the yoga, failed. So once we exhausted every possible option, said, okay, you have to do the yoga, and this is what separates the men from the boys, or the adults from the children, if you don't want to be sexist. So I, you know, worked on the yoga, and one of the things I noticed was that when I got to a certain point in Raja Yoga, you work on your concentration. And at that point, you know, you're sitting and you're staring at an object, seeing how long you can keep your concentration on that object without a break. We all know breaks from the Book of Wise. And when you're trying to do yoga and you start moving around when you're not supposed to, bam, that's a break. When you're trying to breathe correctly and you miss and skip over a step, that's a break. And you count that, and that's how you measure your progress. So I started working on it, and my teacher said, well, what are you going to use as an object? And I said, oh, I'm going to use a symbol from the Golden Dawn, you know, a pentagram or a tattva. And he said, no, don't do this. Everybody does this. Don't do this. Don't use a tattva. Don't use some sort of abstract symbol. They're too abstract. They don't get your concentration. Get a photograph. Get a picture of a person, like Aleister Crowley. I think the one I wound up using was a 1960s Fillmore rock and roll poster of this woman sitting in a yoga position. It was like kind of old-fashioned-y looking. She was kind of hot. I still have it. But he said, you know, if you look at these abstract symbols, they don't capture your attention the same way. And I come back to this when I look at people's tourist photographs from when they go on vacation. When you're taking pictures of you and your friends on vacation, do not take pictures of the landscape, no matter how beautiful it looks at the time, because landscapes, unless you're Adam Ansel Adams, and most of us aren't, are boring to look at. But if you put a human being in the picture then with the landscape, then everybody's like, oh, this is an interesting, you know, vacation picture, not like, get out of here. So that's also true with this yoga exercise, and it's also true with the Goetia. Because the Goetia have a virtue. They are personalities. Okay? They are not abstract forces in the way, you know, the spirit of air is, or, you know, the spirit of fire of water. Those entities have personalities, but it takes you a much longer time to see them, and they're on a different plane. The Goetia, and this is kind of why it has a sleazy reputation in many quarters, is sort of like People magazine, right? I mean, no one here is going to admit to reading People magazine. We actually have a copy in the house now, and I read it this week. But People magazine is popular because it's all about personalities and people. It's the exact opposite of, like, arid, abstract images of abstract, arid things. Instead, it's, you know, Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher or whatever. But the Goetia is kind of like that. And the reason this helps you with the astral plane is because it gives you personalities to facet on. And that's why you can develop your astral vision quickly with the Goetia. Because you're not looking at abstract things. You're looking at these vivid, arresting, real, actual personalities. So that is why I think using the Goetia helps you with astral work. Next, we're in number 8. 8, of course, sphere is Hode. Now, originally I said, look, you get to learn stuff. And if you look at the Goetia and you pick demons to work with, a lot of them say things like, we teach liberal arts. You know, and there's like a whole bunch of them that teach various scientific subjects and liberal arts. I know a lot of people in the OTO who want to be in school all the time. You know, the liberal arts are not unpopular in the Bohemian community. Sometimes, I would argue, they're a little too popular. You know, there's people who just their entire life, from the time they're 20 to the time they're old enough to retire, is spent at a university somewhere. And that's their excuse for why they can't do anything or can't be counted on to do anything, is I'm in college! And I know people in the occult community who that's their idea of heaven on earth, is to be in graduate school forever. Because of that, the Goetia should be attractive to people because this is what they're into. They're into helping people learn about liberal arts. So enough of my snotty comments about that. In general, though, you'll learn things that are not always in books with the Goetia. And there's a difference between reading about magic and doing magic. And most of the people in the occult community have arguments over which book about doing magic that they've read rather than the magic that they've done. And if you want to actually learn about the material in the books that you bought, you should be doing some magic. And having arguments about what somebody else did with their magic versus what somebody else did with their magic and various second and third hand opinions is not really magic. It can be fun, but it's not magic in the same way actually doing magic is. And when you start doing the Goetia, you start learning in practical terms, a lot of the stuff that you've read, and you're, oh, now this makes sense. I understand this. The other thing that the Goetia are really good at is helping you get magical books. And I'm going to just talk a little bit. There's different kinds of magical books, and I'm working on breaking down, you know, what is a magical book? What is an occult book? Well, an occult book is a book that you don't know about yet. It's occult. It's not obvious. And sometimes that is a shimmering scroll of information you can barely understand that exists on a higher plane that is not actually in a text or that you will have to write down in a text, should that be your fate. And sometimes it is a book marked $3 that's up at Moe's on Telegraph Avenue that you just didn't know about. You can hide things in plain sight just as well as you can hide them in the Andes or in the Himalayas. And then there's a second category of the really cool unpublished books that we're all lusting after, which circulate on Xerox. Some of us have them, some of us don't, some of us want to increase our collection of them. The Goetia is really, really good at helping you get occult texts, hopefully in all three of those areas. So if you want more books, the Goetia, I think, is the place to go. I have used them to get a lot of books, and they have been very helpful with that. Next, we are in the sphere of Netzach, which, as we all know, is the sphere of romantic love and sex. And I have written down here that this is sort of the attraction zone with magic. And there's two sorts of attractive forces that come into play with the Goetia here. The first are using goetic spirits to find sexual partners. They are very good at this. One story that I treasure had, you know, some friends and I trying to get a sexual partner for one of our friends. And while we were doing the operation, a woman started banging on the door of the house. She is a model, and she is on the cover of a book that is still in print. And she was there just to get at the guy we were trying to help. It was one of those weird, and I've had, you know, more than one of these where you're doing the thing and the thing is happening sort of simultaneously, and she was banging on the door of the house to get in. And of course, later on, she did manage to break through our fortress, and they had a great relationship, and his problems pretty much were solved. So that's the first kind of like miraculous, woo, like out of the blue, here it comes. There's a second kind, and that is doing the goetia itself makes you more attractive. And I tell a story about this guy who shall be nameless in the local community, who was hanging out with one of the new people, and, you know, very nubile, very attractive, 20-something woman, and they went by the house my friends and I were living at, and he pointed to that house very seriously and said, "Stay away from that house. That is where the evil black magicians live and do their thing." The next day, she was banging on the door. "I want to meet the black magicians. Where are the black magicians?" So trying to warn her away like this was about as stupid as trying to get rid of ants at a picnic by throwing sugar at them. It didn't work. And I see variations of this going on all the time. You know, this one person wrote me a little while ago. She said, "You know, the more people warn me about you and tell me how terrible you are, the more interesting and important you seem." I was like, "Well, you know, I'm not paying them to do that, but it certainly is, it's certainly working as if I were." So basically, I think this is something to keep in mind. Now, part of the issue is, too, if you're, you know, not somebody who's very attractive and you're not really doing the things you need to do, the goetia is probably not going to help you. The Lord helps those who help themselves. And part of the problem that I've seen, especially in this sphere, is that people have a kind of very strange reaction to magic. And this is interesting. Sometimes when people are dealing with a magical issue, they think everything that's happening is magical. You know, like, "Oh my God, you know, this happened. It must be the result of this working I was doing." You're kind of like, "No, we all kind of knew that was going to happen anyway. Can't really see the connection." You know, maybe, but it doesn't really seem obvious. Other times, the exact opposite sort of reaction occurs, and this is not uncommon. You know, "Shelley, what are you doing your magic for?" "I need a car." Okay. 2 weeks later, Shelley pulls up in a car. "Hey, Shelley, your magic worked." No, really, it didn't. My aunt gave me this car. Didn't the magic work? "No, my aunt gave it to me." "Oh, I get it. The car has to appear at midnight with ghostly drivers, and they have to knock on your door and come out and go, 'Shelley, here's your car.'" You know, so Shelley was basically totally in denial that any of the magic work that she was doing had any effect at all. Now, I don't know about you, but if you were the demon involved with getting Shelley's aunt to give her the car, you know, you might be a little ticked off. "Shelley, hello, you know, we had a deal." No, my aunt gave me the car. So this is sort of a tricky kind of issue. And if you don't make any effort to get any of these things, including the sex partners, the demons are not really going to be able to help you. But in general, if you are willing to do this, this is cool. And frankly, everybody is attracted to people who do difficult and scary things. Doing ceremonial magic seriously is difficult and scary. I will pull no punches. It's what it is. And if you get good at doing things that are difficult and scary, people will be attracted to you. If you are afraid of doing things that are difficult and scary because you are weak and lame, no one will be attracted to you. You will be boring, and you will not have sexual partners by and large. So that's just something to keep in mind. Next is sphere number 6, Tiferet. Now often, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but I've heard this a lot, people say, "Don't do demonic magic or work with the goetia unless you have your HGA experience." Has anyone heard this? I've heard this quite a bit. People say this all the time. And I think this is a load of crap. I think this is a bad sort of like scarifying thing that people do. But I understand part of it, which is unless you really know what your will is, you're not going to be able to direct anybody else around. And if your will is figuring out what your will is, then you can start to direct people around. But having a very firm will, or even a very firm want, is almost essential in dealing with this kind of magic. And Tiferet is a great place, when you're working with the Goetia, to understand that and to have that crisis. And I think if everybody had that crisis, like, what the hell are you here for? That would be a wonderful crisis to have. So yes, it is scary, it is difficult, but using the Goetia can make you kind of have that crisis and say, what am I really here for and what do I really want? And I like to ask people to think about the kind of bosses they've had in the past. You know, have you ever worked for someone who really didn't know what they wanted and was trying to give you all sorts of contradictory information because they didn't really have a plan? Or a boss who really wasn't interested in what the whole organization was doing but was really trying to goof off all the time and have you do all the work? Now, in general, most of us do not work consistently to sabotage such a boss. I mean, we don't work overtime to like, I'm going to screw that guy. But if something bad happens to that person in the course of their own screw-ups because they don't know what they're really doing, do we get upset? No. Will we rush in to save them at the moment that their karma catches up with them? Probably we will find something else we really need to do when that crap goes down. So this is something you need to keep in mind. What kind of boss are you? And what kind of boss do you want to be? And if you have transcendental goals and a real program that you're going to be consistent and that you're going to stick to, you will be an inspiring boss that people will forgive mistakes, put up with your crap, deal with your idiosyncrasies, because overall they are inspired to go on and to do important things. Dealing with demons is no different from dealing with the usual subordinates at any job in America. Now, if you can't manage people effectively on that level, you cannot manage the demons well. But if you have a plan and you behave responsibly and, you know, forthrightly about it, then you can do pretty well. And using the Goetia will sort of force that on you. Because the demons will say, what is your plan? You know, why am I here? What do you want me to do? And if you're like, I don't really know, then you're going to have to find out. So that's good. Number five is pakad, or fear, some of which we've touched on. What's the difference between a baseball player and a baseball fan? Now, pro ball people play baseball. That's their job. They have this experience of it. It is very different from the experience of people coming in to watch them play. Real magicians who actually do ceremonial magic and invocation have a very, very different life and way of approaching magic than magical fans do, or people who read magical books, sort of like magical pornography. Right? They don't actually have sex, they use pornography, they don't actually do magic, they read books on the occult. This is not uncommon. Stepping up to the plate and actually starting to do serious magic like this makes you a baseball player. It doesn't make you a baseball fan. And the other issue, too, is I don't know if you've seen this around. I've seen a lot of this around when I visit people that are involved in the occult. You'll come over to their house and they'll be like, this is our magical sword. And they'll show it off. And then we'll go back in this little place in their cabinet, you know, when for some other guest to come by. And they'll be like, this is my magical wand. And they'll bring it, and sometimes they're really nice. You know, I saw a wand a while ago that was gorgeous. But it was like something they bought on TV or at a store or something. It wasn't a real tool they were using in their house. Now, the same people usually don't show you their vacuum cleaner, or they don't show you their hammer that they use because they're nailing all the time. You know, sometimes they might. If you're really into tools, you might go down and you'll see, oh, yeah, this guy's got a great tool set. But it's not that sort of like show-off item, like you're his. And for most people, magical tools are props. They're curios, they're collector's items, they're not tools in the same way they are when you actually start using them. And if you do the Goetia, suddenly you're going to find, I'm using my dagger to do stuff, or I'm using my wand to do stuff. And it stops being this sort of collector's item, kitschy, sort of collectible, and more something that's a real tool that you really use. And that, I think, is extremely important. And that's something I think we should all want. We shouldn't want to be these people who are sort of playing at being magicians by collecting this stuff, but actually doing it and using it. The next stage is 4, which is Hessen. Now, in this sphere, we like to talk about leadership. Learning to direct and manipulate occult forces to specific and detailed ends will make you a leader. Because these creatures are coming to you, or you're bringing them to you, and you are giving them jobs and direction. Now, oftentimes, we go through life, we're not really leaders the same way. But now, say you have, like, a demon with 144 servitors, or you know how many, and they're looking to you. What do I do? What do I tell these guys to do? And suddenly you become a leader, and you have to have goals, you have to have plans, you actually have to start thinking strategically, because if you're really building the temple, the thing you're asking the demons to do now is going to be linked to the thing you're going to ask them to do next month, or the month after, or the week after. All these things are connected. This is related to the charisma issue that happens in Netzach, but it's more wide-ranging. The magical community needs leaders with experience in magic. Most of our current leadership is seriously flawed in this respect. They don't know anything about magic. There, I said it. They don't. Not in the way that Crowley did, certainly. Since the Goetia teaches leadership skills, because you are dealing with powerful and mysterious forces with concrete ends in mind, it is going to be useful in training future leaders. Be one of them. And I would much rather have people coming into power in the occult community, whether it's in the OTO or whatever group, who have like solid experience in doing invocations and serious magical work, than people who've skipped all of that and are presenting their swords and their cups and like nancy-pantsy little display cases in their homes or whatever. Okay. Now, this kind of goes back to the boss issue. You know, what's a good boss? What's a bad boss? And we've all had really bad bosses. What's a good boss? You know, good bosses are people who lead through experience and also with transcendental goals in mind. I had a boss who drove me crazy most of the time, but if he called me up tomorrow and asked me to come and do something, I'd probably do it just because he has the charisma, he has the motive, he has the drive, and when he's around, you want to get involved in whatever it is he wants you to do. He's that interesting, he's that exciting, he's that purposeful. The occult community doesn't have a lot of people like that in it, okay? Across the board, we don't. We need them, okay? So using the Goetia will help you practice with that sort of motivation and leadership, because you will see transcendental goals that will help you be the sort of person who can look beyond little petty issues and your own personal nonsense and say, hey, look, put that aside. This is where we're going. So keep that in mind. The next issue I want to talk about is understanding. Do you really want to understand the magical universe? Well, what are you going to do that? Is it going to be reading a lot of books by other people who claim to have understood it? Sure, that's going to be important. But you're also going to have to practice. You're also going to have to test what's in those books. The Goetia enables you to do all of that stuff. It enables you to ask questions and through a praxis actually understand something. One of my teachers keeps pointing out when we talk about various issues, they don't have a praxis of testing. You know, with the Goetia, you know, you can say, okay, Keith, I want X book. Do I have a praxis of trying to get it? Yes, I do. I can call up a demon, summon it, interrogate it, talk to it, make a deal with it, and see if I can get the book. Other people, you know, they don't have that praxis of trying to put all of this occult stuff into any sort of form other than speculation and airy theorizing. So the Goetia really helps you understand the magical universe through praxis. Now, one of the other interesting things I've noticed, and maybe other people have picked up on this too, is the banishing that goes on in the Thelema community, but probably throughout the whole occult world as well. People banish like crazy. They'll banish at a drop of a hat. right? I don't know if you know you all have seen this, Marlene. I'm sure you have. But like, you know, people will get up. Can you do a banishing? I'll do a banishing. People banish all the time. I'm feeling nervous today. I have a little anxiety. Come in and banish. Okay, banish. Hey, did Shelly banish? Yeah, Shelly banished. Well, let Steve banish. Okay, Charlie. Charlie wants to banish. Oh man, Charlie's banishing sucks. Yeah, but he needs to improve it. So let him do it again. Let him do it again. No, I can't see it again. I can't see it. Let Shelly do it. Shelly's banishings are great. And all we hear, banish, banish, banish. Like, people, they banish like crazy. When does anyone ever invoke?
Constantly.
Well, you're supposed to, but often the community does not. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and I said, why will people banish at the drop of a hat, anytime, all the time, but not invoke? And he said, when you invoke, you go off the script. You do your banishing ritual. You do your banishing ritual, and it's over, and you have a nice feeling. Ah, I've banished. Okay. Now, there's a problem with this, in that too much banishing and no invoking means everything starts to go. I know people who banish constantly. They banish all the time. They banish four or five times a day. We're not going to say any names. And they started losing everything. They banished their car. They banished their job. They banished their girlfriend. They banished their furniture. They banished all their money. That went really quick. And they're still banishing. And like you kind of look at them a little bit, and like you can feel the suction. It's just pulling everything. And you're like, wow, what the hell has stayed? You know, man, that crappy house is much stronger than I thought it was going to be. I thought they'd be out on the street and homeless, and now some of them are. You know, their banishing has been that successful. So I'm not saying don't banish. I'm saying balance it with some invocation. Banish, but invoke. Banish, but invoke. Well, what's the problem? In invocation, especially with Goetic invocation, you do the script, you do the invocation, and then you wait. That's the problem. Because you have to go off the script. What's going to happen? You don't have control. Now, you know, the ball is in the ballpark of whoever you've invoked. And that's scary to people. They don't want to give up that kind of control. So we see a lot of banishing. We don't see a lot of invocation. The other thing that the Goetia enables you to do for understanding is actually use things like 777. You know, the Goetia is basically based on planetary magic. Each one of the Goetic seals is based on a planetary metal. So in planning your invocations, you can tag a lot of planetary attributions to the invocation, and you can work on developing that and testing 777. Most of the time, what do people use 777 for? I had it up my dad's license plate. Let me go check it at Sephiroth. You know, this is just crap, right? Huh. Look, you know, my Social Security card adds up to that. It's like, I don't know, who cares? Whereas with this, you actually have a process and a praxis to apply 777 and these other Crowley books, too. Now, in larger-term goals, you know, I touched on this earlier because all these things keep coming back to each other, but you know, what do you really want out of life? And what are you here for? I had one teacher ask me, what are you here for? Now, after how many years, 15 years in the occult community, hey, I'm a big shot. I've been doing this shit for a long time. What are you here for? I was stunned. It was a real crisis moment for me. I couldn't come up with an answer fast enough for him. I was very unhappy. And I went through a period of like 2 or 3 days where I was just like, shit, I have to give this guy an answer. You know, this is really unhappy making for me. I don't like this kind of stress. The Goetia really, really offers you ways of resolving that kind of problem in practice. It's not something that, you know, you just have to think about or consider or read about or guess at, but you have to test, because the demons will test you on this to see whether you're really sincere about what you want and what you're really here for or not. So what are your goals? Where do you want to be 5 or 10 years from now? I hate to say this, but most of the people in the occult community bounce around without any goals at all. They're here, they're there, they're moving here, they're moving there. If they stay in the same place, they don't change. They don't get any better, they don't get any happier. Their lives are not lives that I really want to emulate. I don't look up to these people and say, I want my life to be like that. They're sad and pathetic a lot of the time. So are we going to go along with this, or are we really going to have goals in the short time that we all have here? I think the Goetia, because they look for instruction, prompt you to come up with what your goals are. And I know I sound a little Amway-ish here. I don't mean to. Sorry. But the Goetia is that sort of cheesy part of the occult community. I mean, it really is that location for the S. Amway Nichiren Shoshin kind of thing. And that's not always bad. That's just what I'm suggesting. Okay, so it's a start. Much astral work is a trivial distraction when seen from the bigger picture. Greed for material wealth, cheap sex, or even insider knowledge is transitory. But unless you start beginning somewhere, you will never get anywhere. Using the Goetia opens up a lot of doors. The doors to practical, applied magic, the door to the astral and its mastery, the doors to leadership and charisma, the door to choosing what you really want out of life, the door to understanding an occult system. No one has to get stuck in one place, but if you don't move forward, you are stuck already. I am acknowledging that there is that cheesy, materialistic part of this, and it's a trap. But unless you get started somewhere and you start working with tangible issues, I think you're going to have problems. Those are the top 10 advantages. Let us now move on to the disadvantages of using the Goetia as a system. Number 10, all living things must what? Poop.
Oh.
Poop. Some living things live so long, I don't know. But I know every living thing must poop. The Goetia is a living system of magic, which means it poops. And if you use it, you will have to deal with its poop. Now, a good magician uses his poop for fertilizer on his rose garden. See Lever 418, the 13th heir. But this process becomes messy until one learns how to deal with it. You know, new parents have a bigger problem with poopy diapers than experienced parents who've had more than one kid. They get much more down with it. But, you know, poop is poop. Goetic magic produces poop. And this is one of the reasons why it has a really bad reputation. But every other system of magic produces poop, too. If we go up to Marin County to the Dianic Huckleberry Coven, their system is going to poop. It does. It poops. And they may deny it. No, we have no poop here. Believe me, it poops, okay? And most, you know, people that are really involved with one system act like their system's poop doesn't smell. It does. But, you know, so look, if you guys say, I can't handle goetic poop, do not use the Goetia. It's a bad system for you. If you're, like, consigned to the fact that any system I'm going to use isn't going to be poop, then you should try checking it out. But it will poop. What is the poop that I'm talking about? It's the shells from the system. It's negative consequences. It's bad problems. It's, you know, people being mad at you. It's irrational stuff. Those are the poopy things, and you're going to have to, like, deal with it. But yes, all magical systems poop, so think about that. Next, number 9, is the astral plane again. The astral plane and the pure vision of it is different from most ordinary experiences. The threshold to the astral plane can be scary to cross. This is why so many people avoid it. Now, I have found myself very, very, very rarely agreeing with Jerry Cornelius about any ceremonial magic issue ever. But he says one thing in Red Flame number 7 that I totally agree with, which is if you don't start working on your astral work when you're young, it's going to be really tough to do it as you get older, because as you age, you build up carapaces to keep the astral plane out. And you have to break through those, and it becomes significantly tougher as you get older. If you're in your early 20s, learning how to scry is a lot easier than learning it when you're in your early 40s. Jerry's basic attitude is like, give up after a certain age, but whether I haven't tested that well enough, but I think he's absolutely right about how hard it is when you reach a certain age. People clinging to certain fears are going to be scared, and it's tough to do, and it's scary. But moving on to Hode, getting wrapped up in the astral plane, once you're in it, it basically can degenerate into an ongoing game of Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, I've seen people who really get into the astral plane, and you can see this also with Sir John Dee and Edward Kelly sometimes too. You know, these are people that had astral work that's so great, we're still studying it. You know, hundreds of years later, it's more significant than anything any idiot has produced since 1970. Let's be honest, okay? And you see a lot of them, chasing down minutia things. And if you get into the astral plane, you are not going to be John Dee and Edward Kelly off the bat most of the time. And, you know, you may find yourself walking around. We saw a red dog, and the dog had on a black bandana. On that black bandana was a napkin ring with a G on it. Now, what does that mean? And you're like, okay, you can get lost in that sort of thing forever. It's a total trap. And it seems fascinating and interesting at the time, and everybody else is kind of looking at you like, okay. Okay, number 7, NedSat. Some problems here. What is the opposite of attraction? Fear and terror, right? While one may become more charismatic, one can also become more frightening. Goetic magicians can, without meaning to, project an aura of menace and occult diabolism. While this is quite a turn-on to many of the nubile 20-something women mentioned earlier, it can be problematic in other circumstances. One sometimes has to work overtime to appear harmless, which can be draining. And one of the best occult people I've ever met has to spend a gigantic amount of energy looking harmless. Because if he didn't, everybody would be running in terror. In general, you know, that is really draining to me. One sometimes has to work overtime. As I said, some people, when they find out you can use the Goetia, will naturally assume that you can dispatch enemies at will and on a whim and confine them to the worst pit of hell because they are offended by a E-list post you wrote. While this isn't exactly true, it can make for some difficult social situations. People projecting their fears and problems onto you can be a lot less fun than cute people, projecting their sexual fantasies onto you. Because the Goetia is practical rather than just theoretical, people will get scared. You will have to deal with this. And if you start doing the Goetia in a serious and together way, you will have this problem. I guarantee it. I don't know if you saw this. I don't know who I sent this to, but somebody was just like freaking out about some crazy stuff recently, and I just thought, oh, this is just another example of this. I mean, I run into this every once in a while where people have these very irrational ideas like, you can kill people magically. No, really, I don't think I'm that good, you know, and every time I bring that up, people are like, oh, did you really do it? No, I haven't done it. But yeah, you'll have to deal with that. Number 6, Tiphereth, you will get greedy and distracted. Many of us are going to be tempted. How committed are any of us to the great work that we cannot be tempted away from it for the nonce by distractions and temptations that come our way? If we think, I'm not saying that this is true, but if we think that power corrupts, doesn't occult power corrupt? Isn't it a corrupting element? This is not usually the biggest problem that people run into using the Goetia. Everyone thinks that it is because of Christian culture and popular culture dealing with magic, but it's not. It is a problem. It's not the biggest problem, but it remains a problem nonetheless. I think people need to work through those temptations, just the way Jesus had to go into the desert and deal with the devil. That's me. If you don't think you can handle it, don't do it. But that is a downside to the Goetia. Next, in Pakad or Gabura, once one plays baseball professionally, how much real communion can you ever have with baseball fans? I mean, I don't know. You're out there doing your best to stay on the team and not get sent back down to the minors, and you see fat people stuffing their faces in the bleachers screaming at you. One can get really tired of armchair magicians when one is not one. And when occult organizations are filled with people who have little to no practical experience, and worse yet, this extends to the leadership of such groups, well, it can make you a little cranky. And if you want to stay on the same page as all the people who have no experience whatsoever that do not pick up the Goetia, if you pick it up, you will be in a different situation. Okay, as Marvel Comics have taught us, moving on to Hesed, what have Marvel Comics taught us that we all must know? With great power comes great responsibility. As you have been setting demons to tasks, so you will be put to tasks. Some of those tasks may include teaching the Goetia and other invocation-style ceremonial magic to scaredy-cat men and doctrinaire feminists. You have my deepest sympathies. But all that power and insight comes with a price. Too bad. And yes, this is very true. You don't get something for nothing. And you will have to work just as hard as you put other people to work. There is no free lunch here. Now, number 3, Bina. To judge from some attitudes we see in the community, people have a happy, happy attitude of the way the universe works. Extreme occult understanding, I have found, tends to disabuse one of this happy, cheery attitude about the universe. Deeper understanding can make one unhappy if one is wedded to a nicey-nicey worldview. Likewise, knowledge and judgment in human affairs, as some of us call it, K and J, tends to make the people who have it look a lot more like H.L. Mencken and a whole lot less like Deepak Chopra. Mencken was buddies with Crowley and John Branch Cabell, while Deepak, we won't get into that. But this is really serious. If you have like a nicey-nicey attitude about the universe that you don't want to examine, you think everything's going to come out for the best and everybody's beautiful and everything's wonderful, don't use the Goetia as a system. It will disabuse you of that reality. Now, it may show you beauty and intensely wonderful things, but they don't tend to be the sort of sentimental attitude that a lot of people have. If you want to cling to that, stay away from the Goetia. And even if you think you don't have it, the Goetia will show you where you do. If you think, beyond that, you will find out where you're not. When you struggle to reach goals, you may fall short of them. The Goetia is not always going to work the way you want it to. You will run into failure. If you can't handle failing, making mistakes and learning from them, don't use the Goetia. It is not perfect. People talk about will all the time, but they never sully their will with specifics. Right? It's true. The Goetia demands specifics. And if you're afraid of making commitments like that and want to play it safe, don't pick up the Goetia. Playing it safe brings its own problems, and the current OTO suffers from those problems because it wants to play it safe. Is your will meaning to you in the smallest detail or only on a scale so huge you will never have to think about it, sort of like God? If so, stay away from the Goetia because you will find yourself in trouble. Likewise, if you are profoundly uncomfortable with the idea of creating change and conformity to your will, you should stay away from the Goetia since they have no real problem with that concept at all. Many people object to real magic on moral and ethical grounds. And every time I do this lecture, people have come up to me and said, I don't really think it's right to use the Goetia for X, Y, and Z issues. If you really believe that, why these people are even involved in the OTO, I have no idea. But if you really believe that, stay away from the Goetia. This is not their problem. They are like absolutely change in conformity with will. Lastly, the Goetia is not the be-all and the end-all any more than any other system is. It has its problems. It will not do everything. Perhaps there is a system out there that will, but you could spend your whole life seeking it and never advance very far. Good luck. Those are the top 10 advantages and the top 10 disadvantages.
Well, this brings us to the end of today's show. I hope everybody enjoyed the lecture by Keith 418 about the Goetia, and also remind everyone that a 32-minute outtake from that, with Q&A and practical advice, is available exclusively on the Thelema Coast to Coast website, www.thelemacoasttocoast.com. There are four ways to get in touch with Thelema Coast to Coast. The first is the Thelema Coast to Coast website. Second is emailing podcast@thelemacoasttocoast.com. The third is calling the Thelema Coast to Coast voicemail 206-20-AGAPE or 206-202-4273. And the last way is writing to Thelema Coast to Coast, care of John Crow, P.O. Box 7045, Marietta, Georgia, 30065. Our outgoing music is by a band called Gothic, and this song is called Celesti Awakens. It's an instrumental, and there are a number of other instrumentals and vocals on the Gothic website, which I'll link to on the Thelema Coast to Coast webpage. So thanks again for listening, and I hope you stick around and listen to future podcasts. Love's the law, love under will.